We're live. You want to switch seats?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we got Seth. We got Ian. We're talking about 1987. Catherine Bigelow, Academy Award winning now for Hurt Locker. Directed film, a little horror film called Near Dark with Adrian Pasidar from Heroes and Prophet. That's about... He hasn't really done a hell of a lot other than that as the star. And we got Lance Hendrickson, Bill Paxton, and...
Lance Hendrickson was in...
And Vasquez. Three people from Aliens. And Catherine Bigelow was married to James Cameron.
And one person from Seamstress.
Yeah, and Lance Hendrickson was also in Seamstress. That's right. That's true.
Let's talk about Seamstress.
We talked about Seamstress earlier. We talked about it at Feudal Con.
Well, what if somebody didn't...
Pick it up. Yeah, we did. You mentioned it. I was just listening to Futile Con, and you mentioned Seamstress.
I mentioned it to Josh, like in the background.
It was picked up. Anyway, so this is kind of a hidden gem of the 80s, I guess. It's got a soundtrack by Tangerine Dream, which gives it kind of an ethereal quality. It's got pretty good cinematography. It's set sort of in the, I don't know, I guess the heartland of America, Oklahoma, New Mexico, deserts, and sort of arid climate. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Badlands, the Terrence Malick film. Just a little bit in terms of its elements of its look. And the also, like, Natural Born Killers, because it's basically a bunch of crazy people running around killing people.
Or the Bruce Springsteen song Badlands?
Probably like that a little, too.
Badlands.
But ostensibly these are vampires. They never mention... They never say that in the movie, which is kind of dumb because there's so many things that are specific to vampires that they don't really hide it very well. So it's not like they're trying to portray vampires in some kind of pseudo-realistic sort of situation. It's like where they show them get in the sun and then get all burned up and light on fire. And I don't know. And
they should have called the movie Vampires.
Super strength. No, I mean, I like that it kind of skirts it a little, but I don't know. It didn't skirt it as much, so much that it needed to, like, you know, not just cop out and say what it is, which is a vampire horror movie. But it's a different kind of movie. It's sort of got, like, a love story in it. And, I mean, you could attribute some of that possibly to the fact that it's a female director. And she also co-wrote the screenplay, along with the guy that wrote The Hitcher, one of Mark's favorite movies, with Rutger Hauer and C. Thomas Howell. And Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Never seen that one.
Rutger Hauer plays this, like, psychotic hitchhiker that C. Thomas Howell picks up, and then he ends up just tormenting him, and it's got a pretty interesting scene with, like, a woman chained to two different trucks. Or maybe it's four. I forget. I forget if she gets quartered.
She gets bravehearted?
Yeah, a little bit. But, no, I mean, Near Dark is pretty simple. Bill Paxton's having a lot of fun, so of course he was in his Terminator Aliens mood at that point before he was a huge star, but he was clearly having a lot of fun with the character of being this sort of psychotic, you know, immortal guy. Lance Hendrickson was good and creepy as sort of the patriarch of the roving band of psychotic killers.
Even though the young kid was the old man.
even though the young kid was the old man, which was fun. That they had a kid in it. You've got the family going after Prophet, going after Adrian Pasidar.
Dollman?
Dollman.
I had to point that out to you.
I pointed out to you that it was Dollman.
Right. The Revisionist History Podcast is what this should be called.
Oh, really? Anyway, so, yeah, they go and they find him, and it's sort of this weird little love story component that... I don't know. It's not really it's not a perfect movie. It's got a few sort of strange flaws, and its acts are kind of meandering in terms of its structure. It does make it feel kind of long in places because you're sort of waiting for things to happen. But it does have sort of a structure such that it reaches a climax, and then it kind of concludes. I mean, it is unique as a vampire movie, at least at that time in the 80s, where I don't know if there weren't a heck of a lot. I mean, let's see, you had Lost Boys. No, you actually did have a handful of kind of unique vampire movies by the 80s. It wasn't just, like, Dracula stuff set in, like, Victorian era and things like that.
With Tom Cruise?
You mean Interview with a Vampire? Interview with the Vampire had some good components to it. I mean, at least addressed the idea of the sort of curse of being immortal but never being able to see the sun or appreciate anything. I remember in that when he, when Brad Pitt's character talks about like how when cinema all of a sudden came about, he could finally sort of, you know, gain like a
perspective on the sun.
A virtual, yeah. A voyeuristically enjoy being outside or something, I guess.
Is that how you feel?
No, I go outside sometimes. I'm not a vampire. I've been wanting to see this movie for a while just to have kind of seen it, to kind of have it in the canon for its sort of unique elements and its intrinsically 80s components. It's got some pretty good lighting and some scenes, and like I said, the Tangerine Dream score kind of separates it from a lot of material and gives it sort of a stranger, creepier component in some spots.
Who's Tangerine Dream?
You know, it's like an electronic group. I think they're European. They also did the score for Legend and I think a handful of other films, but off the top of my head I couldn't just name them. So I mean, it's really not a heck of a lot to talk about. I mean, the plot is such that this country boy sees a cute girl having ice cream one night, and he starts sort of getting flirtatious with her and offers to give her a ride home or whatever.
Starts getting fresh with her.
And she, you know, she probably hasn't interacted with anyone in such a long time, and she kind of lets it happen for a while. Sees that he's just sort of a nice, innocent guy, and I think she waits too long to kill him. I mean, because that was probably just what her game was. She was going to go... Each member of the tribe of vampires has their own approach to how they do their kills. And the kid pretends that he's been hit by, you know, been on a bike accident. So
why do you assume that that's the only way he does it, even though they explain that he's done it other ways?
Well, I mean, I'm just pointing out a way that's shown in the film. Yeah. And to show, like, the kid uses the fact that he's a kid and his innocence. And, you know, the girl, May or whatever, uses the fact that she's sort of an attractive, like,
girl. They also mention the point that, or demonstrate the point that they just all sometimes just go kill people.
Yeah, they do. They just sometimes just walk into the shit kicker bar. But that the reason that they did that way as, like, a collective, I think, was because they were trying to get the main character to commit his first kill, and they wanted to kind of make it a group thing.
That way you couldn't do the transfusion blowback.
Which apparently didn't matter anyway, because...
Yeah, she should have died at the end. It would have made it a lot better movie.
It would have been a little more tragic, yeah. Instead, it kind of had this sort of happy ending.
Yeah, it was gay.
And we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but, I mean, you're right. Basically, it's just sort of a struggle for this one guy to kind of go through a bad experience with a girl, and... her crazy family, I guess, is kind of the underlying theme. And then in the end, he survives, and he kind of gets her out of the abusive, terrible situation they're in. And it's a happy ending, and then it freeze frames and zooms in like 400 blows. And now Kathryn Bigelow has an Oscar for Hurt Locker. I think she made Point Break a couple years after this.
After Hurt Locker?
No, after... After Near Dark.
I think they should have done more with the female character, like, developed her more so. I mean, I think she could have almost been more of a main character, been more interesting. This other guy was just kind of, like, clueless.
That's a good point.
I mean, he literally, like, didn't... I mean, yeah, they made a point that he tried to call his family once, and he probably tried a couple more times, but it's like, he didn't seem all that bothered about the fact that, you know, his little sister and all that, Until they literally, basically coincidentally, walk into the room, you know? And then all of a sudden he cares about him again, you know? It's kind of strange. And then just the series of circumstances that allowed him to basically kill off a pack of vampires that have been around for 200 years is just silly, you know? Just the...
Well, I mean, they'd shown... enough to imply that a lot of the characters like Lance Hendrickson and stuff had gotten pretty sloppy. Maybe they had just been alive too long, you know, because it was not the first time that they had waited, that they had ran out of night and been in a tight spot in the movie. So I don't feel like that was not indicative of their characters, you know what I mean? And they also showed them like playing cards when they had downtime and pulling guns casually and stuff on each other, which go to show that they weren't really trying to be all that inconspicuous either. They didn't really care. They were very nihilistic in their approach. to the point where it seems like they didn't, maybe they were ready to die, you know, in the back of their minds. That's what I kind of get from it. That's why I can accept that. And the coincidence thing, as like a writer, or anytime you're analyzing movies, I mean, those things have to happen in order for a story to work a certain way. And the question is just how off the wall is it? And the fact that Doll Man and his daughter were chasing after the main character means that makes it not terribly coincidental. I mean, they'd be on kind of the same routes possibly, and you know, there was never any sense. I think it would have been better if there had been some kind of a like clue that Doll Man had found on the road somewhere at some point to indicate this is the right direction to go or something. You're right, that would have been nice. And I feel like there was maybe just a few components of missing. There was probably a couple more scenes with May, the female vampire, that we were sympathetic to as an audience. And maybe even a little more with Doll Man, because it was like Doll Man ends up being able to perform a transfusion pretty like easy peasy. And so, like I said, I created a backstory for him where he was like a medic in Vietnam, just because that would make sense. And that probably was a throwaway scene that they just screwed the pacing up or whatever else. And they did give you a little of May, how she always wanted to go out and look at the stars, and she wanted to try to be outside and just enjoy being outside. But you're right, she could have been a much more interesting character, more sympathetic, and they could have done more with her, and they really didn't. I mean, the characters were kind of bland.
Well, right? I mean, she was interesting and sympathetic. She just could have been... They could have utilized that more.
Yeah, definitely. I think the film was taking a lot on the plot. It was much more plot-driven than character-driven, in the sense that it was such a unique plot and a unique story for its time about these outlaw psychopath serial killers. I mean, the vampire angle is sort of irrelevant to the story in a weird way, because they're just as terrifying, almost just as terrifying as if they weren't, because the sunlight thing becomes such a convenient weakness on their part, that the fact that they're super strong and that they can't be killed by conventional weapons is sort of rarely so heavily in their favor that it makes them seem super duper invincible.
You'll call a tanker a conventional weapon?
Yeah, tanker.
I'll drive that tanker.
The tanker that blows up and kills Paxton. I think I'd give the movie I'd give it probably a 3 out of 5.
Who'd you think would win in a fight, Bill Paxton or Bill Pullman?
Ooh, Bill Paxton, probably. What do you think? What would Near Dark? What rating do you give it? If you have to rate it, out of 5.
Out of 5? I don't do 5s.
Well, in your Too Cool for School situational rating system, how do you rate it?
I give it a smiley face.
A smiley face? So that's like a binary thing. It's either smiley face or sad face. Frowny face, you know?
No, have you seen them sheets at Staples? You can buy there's like so many faces.
Yeah, but how many of them are more positive than smiley face? If you're talking about a rating system. I mean, a winky face doesn't mean anything to rate an object, does it? Winky face is like if it's super ironically enjoyable. Like, would you give Roadhouse a winky face? Like, hey, this movie's not good, but it's, you know, wink good.
Roadhouse would get a straight face.
A stern face?
Yeah.
A stoic face?
Yes.
Because it's just, it's you don't fuck around with Roadhouse. You don't mess around with it. It's, yeah. Okay.
There's many faces. This is going to be my new rating system from now on.
Your rating system is going to be different faces. And so yeah. Near Dark gets a smiley face.
Smiley face.
A toothy smiley face because of the vampires?
No teeth.
Okay.
There's many faces.
Many, I understand.
It's the beginning of
I know, well, we've got many podcasts to explore. I'd like to welcome you on now, the official...
A brilliant rating system. Indeed. I think we should all use. And it should be a mandatory feudal podcast rating system.
So you want me to start rating things with faces?
What would you give this one?
I'd give this one kind of a dull face.
A doll face?
A dull face.
For Doll Man?
No. For Doll Man. Because it was kind of dull, to be honest.
So you're just gonna think of a word for the way you think about the movie, and then put that word in front.
Well,
of
I don't. Face. I haven't seen this sheet you talk about from Staples. You're gonna have to get one and bring it over before we can really implement this.
Or you
this.
Can use your you can actually
imagination.
Be creative, yeah.
That's why you did, and I came up with the idea of a dull face.
Yeah, he's like, I think the movie was dull. Dull face.
That's as creative.
I didn't say I think the movie's smiley face.
Hey,
I mean,
I give the movie a smiley face.
I do. But I thought because I
give the movie a dull face. That's what I said.
Because the movie was dull.
Yeah.
I didn't think the movie was smiley, therefore I gave it a smiley face.
Oh my god.
That's the difference.
Okay.
There's more of a thought process involved.
There was a lot of thought process involved in mine.
It's like you'd be like, it was an exciting movie. I give it an exciting face. I think it was a sad movie. I give it a sad face. That's what you're going to do. So.
Well, I'm going to need to see the staple sheet, and you're going to have to school
me.
You're going to have to school me on this
new
system.
You could have a sad movie,
yeah.
And you could give it a smiley face.
No, I understand that perfectly. Yeah, no, I understand
You don't
that.
Understand that, because you just gave a dull movie a dull face. And dull
this
face
was
doesn't even
it was,
exist.
It was appropriate.
You made that up.
It was appropriate in this situation.
So it's a coincidence that you have zero creativity in your face ratings.
It's possible.
Okay.
You're going to have to... Which you're
I'll
gonna
just
have
slide
to,
on this one.
You're going to have to... Yeah, give me the sheet, and then I can study it.
No, no sheets.
Well, I don't...
I give you a dull face for this podcast, by the way.
Oh. So,
How's that StarCraft going out there, listeners? You been playing? What's your character code number? Email it in, and then we can be buddies.
At futilepodcast@gmail.com. Email Seth your star code power fun number or whatever.
I'm 323 right here, Silver League, 3-on-3.
323?
Dominate, you guys.
Really? Dominate?
I get my ass handed to me all the time now.
Mm. So now that we've done the proper review, we can do the other discussions of anything, if there's any other things you've seen. You've seen the first three Star Wars movies, or was it the last three? Which one was it?
I was totally into StarCraft. I saw
You saw like parts?
I saw the fake, but they had like an extra, like, creature on a sand dune or something.
Yeah, they added more dewbacks, dude.
I saw Dutch get killed. I think that's like all I saw at all three.
Dutch, that's right. Dutch
and Jack Porkins.
And Jack Porkins, yeah.
Which always reminds me of my older brother Ian.
That's not okay.
Because of the personality.
Yeah, right. What about the rotund size?
What else did I see? I saw full blown movies.
Or shows, if there's something good you're watching, you're enjoying right now. You start watching The Wire yet?
No.
What about Lie to Me? You've been TiVoing those. And catching up? How you... Oh, he's giving me the... He's giving me the don't tell the internet audience that I watch Lie to Me.
Real funny.
Are you excited about new House episodes coming up pretty soon?
Are you excited? You don't want to watch them.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I am excited. Yeah. It's a good show.
I think the House is on its downhill spiral, though.
Yeah, it is getting a little... I mean, now, in this season, presumably, he's, like, gonna have... Like, he's gonna be banging the chick and all that, so...
Yeah, it's downhill from
here. It kind of just is, like, ready to wind down. I wouldn't say it's downhill, but maybe wind down. Unless,
it seems like I did watch a movie the other day on TV, but I can't remember what it was.
You were watching football. You were ready for some football.
Yeah, I guess I haven't watched anything, too. Oh, I saw the one with Jack Ryan.
Oh, the Sum of All Fears?
Yeah.
What is that? Because that's mandatorily on FX, like, every weekend?
Yeah, I saw that. That wasn't bad. After I was, like, three quarters way done watching it,
mm-hmm.
I realized I'd already seen it.
And then you're like, this ain't half good either, and then you switched it?
No, I kept watching it. I wasn't sure if I'd already, only seen the second half, like, five times.
Uh-huh. Or if you'd seen the whole thing?
Because I didn't remember the beginning all that much.
The beginning's when, like, they do a whole big rumaru about the president, like, thinking it's going to be nuke time, and it turns out it's just a drill. And, like, it's your wife, sir.
Oh, yeah.
She wants to know what suit you're going to wear.
It was a terrible, terrible film.
Yeah, it's not a good movie,
in, like, every way.
Have you seen...
It's so bad that Ben Affleck is not the worst part of it.
Okay.
That's how bad it is.
You've seen the other three Jack Ryan, or I think there's only
Patriot Games,
Hunt for October, Patriot Games, and Clear and Present Danger. The two with Harrison Ford and one with Alec Baldwin. Did you like those?
I don't remember Clear and Present Danger, although I think I've seen it. And the other ones, Hunt for October was pretty good.
with Sean Connery, and Sam Neill. James Earl Jones is the consistency in the three movies. He plays the admiral that's the head of the CIA in all three of those ones.
Not in The Sum of All Fears.
No, that's Morgan Freeman playing him in that. It's like a younger version of everything. Jack Ryan is younger. It's sort of a reimagining or something, I guess.
The admiral of the CIA, is that what you said?
Well, he's an admiral that's the head of the CIA.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how it is now, right? Isn't there an admiral? Or he's the head of... Some admiral is the head of...
You talking about Lanny Davis?
Yeah, well, if he's an admiral, right?
Lanny Davis?
Okay. I don't have to know these guys by name.
He's not from the military.
Okay, there was some admiral...
He's the head of a think tank that Obama made CIA director.
Okay.
He was Clinton's former chief of staff that started a think tank for the last 8 years, and then now he's the head of the CIA. Okay,
well, I think I meant in the Bush administration, the last... He was a head... They made some admiral the head of some...
Hayden. He was a...
Yeah.
I think he was Army, not Navy.
Hmm. But then he would have been a general or something. Anyway... Yeah, Clear and Present Danger is a pretty good one. That's the one with where he yells at the president. The president's like, "You can't yell at me like some junkyard dog." And he's like, "How dare you, sir?" It's all about the illegal drug war and Willem Dafoe's in it.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
It's a pretty good one.
I don't like Harrison Ford in either of those roles.
You're not a fan of it. You prefer him when he's more focused on, "Give me back my family."
I don't like that either. He always has this thing like he looks like he doesn't want to be doing what he's doing.
But that's good in those roles because it sort of adds a realism, because it's like no real person would want to be like in a circumstance like that.
Then they wouldn't do it, you know what I'm saying? Like then they honestly wouldn't do it. Like at least like Alec Baldwin or whatever, or even Ben Affleck.
You want like an action hero that's got to have like a smarmy look on his face, yeah, like a wry smile
they acted like they didn't want to do it, but you could tell they did want to do it. Whereas like with Harrison Ford, it was like, oh, you know, it's like, well...
You mean you think that...
Like, honestly, if you're working in that capacity that Jack Ryan's always characterized in the beginning of the movies, and you get asked to go down to Columbia and have an Uzi fight with somebody, and you don't want to do it, are you going to do it anyway?
Probably not. Well, that's the thing. That's why that movie is better, because it's like he's like a paper pusher. That's the character, sort of. Instead of this, like Mary Sue kick-ass dude.
The thing that was really stupid about Sum of All Fears was that there's a coup in Russia, and some other guy becomes president of Russia, or whatever you call it. And
I think it's still called Russia, even despite Putin.
Apparently he was, well, I mean, maybe he was the czar of Russia after the coup, I don't know. Anyway, apparently this one guy is the only guy that knew anything about this guy that all of a sudden became president. It's like, seriously, they would have so much intel on this already. Like all the higher-ups would already know about it. Like, all the higher-ups were like, who is this guy that all of a sudden, yet today, became president? It's like... They would have seen this coming, and even if they didn't see it coming, they would at least know about this guy. It's like, you're the only one in the country that's ever written a paper about this guy. It's like, really?
Yeah, it's kind of dumb.
They all think he's a hardliner, but he's like, he's not. I wrote a paper on him in college. He's not a hardliner.
Did you see Air Force One? Did you like Harrison Ford in that?
Same thing.
Yeah, okay. But he's good in the indie movies, right? Because he's playing that archaeologist that's kind of like...
In the indie movies, yeah, he's... it's different because he's not like... He still has that thing like where he doesn't want to be in the circumstances he's in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he does have a desire to be there. He totally, like, in his heart, wants
to be there. Well, he wants to make the discovery and the fortune and glory.
He totally in his heart wants to be there. In the other movies, it's like he doesn't want to be there.
Are you talking about the actor? Like, you can almost tell that, like, he just doesn't care about the role and is, like...
That's probably part of it, actually. But no, that's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
No, Indiana Jones really gets excited when he's actually, like, about to die because he's in some really cool circumstance. Now he acts like he doesn't like to be there because...
But he'll smile a little when he just defeats the bad guy.
Whereas, like, yeah, I mean, Clear and Present Danger, whatever, it's like, there's no part of him that wants to be down in Colombia, you know, in a gunfight. And it's like, well, then why are you down there?
Hmm. But doesn't that... See, that works great for me because it's like... It's like there's a lot of like heroic honor in that. It's like he really doesn't want to be there. He kind of doesn't have to be there because he's just sort of like a bureaucrat Washington type. But he's so cool that he's going to go do it anyway, you know? That's kind of like the definition of heroism, right?
I think so, but I just think it doesn't get played right. I mean, it's just overdone. Like...
Well, he doesn't whine about it or anything.
He does.
In the movie?
Yeah, he does. whole time.
He's not like, I don't want to be here. I'm scared.
That's all the whole movie is nothing but that.
Okay, so there is some reluctance in some places, but I mean, once he goes down to Columbia, he's kind of there. And he acts like a badass when he gives the guy the CIA card to get the chopper. I don't know.
Remember when Cartman went to get the KFC, the Colonel's Chicken? Don't fuck me, Eric. Remember?
Don't you ever fuck me. What would you think of the wrestler of Mickey Rourke being just a tired piece of meat?
I thought that was a pretty good movie.
It's kind of slow, though, right? In a few places?
I didn't think it was slow. I mean...
Well, I mean, it was, like, purposefully slow.
Yeah.
It wasn't, but it wasn't, like, tedious slow.
No, it worked,
And it wasn't, like, super melodramatic and, like, somber and sad.
Right,
like,
right, right.
You didn't feel like you were getting hit over the head by how miserable everything was.
It was done very realistically, very, honestly. I think that the character was just very, very honest. I mean, yeah, it was, he wasn't too dumb. He wasn't too, I mean, he was dumb. He was really dumb, you know. I like that stuff, like, where... Like, had the whole thing with him and his daughter, like, just, like, that whole progress of that was very, to me, very realistic. Like, there was no, you know, I mean, just the way that he got back with her and, you know, she didn't want to be with him and then she kind of came back around and then, you know, they got along and then, you know, he fucked up and then she didn't want anything to do with him. Like, that just, that's all, like, that makes sense.
I guess, but it's also kind of like a heartstringy thing that I kind of hate. Where it's like...
Well, that's how it really works. And like, that's probably what happens a ton of times in real life.
Yeah, to a degree, I guess. But people screw up. And
that's how... That's how. I mean...
And it's kind of scary, but that's kind of true. You know, it's like you fuck up one bad night and it's the wrong night. Because that's pretty much what happens in the movie, too, right? He's like, he's out drinking one night, just being pissed off about something. And it's screwed. He fucks himself over, right? And
yeah.
He misses some Christmas or birthday or some thing his daughter wanted him to be at, and
but that's how life is. I mean, that's
that's the consequences for being flaky, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's how many nights are there where you could not even talk to anybody the next day or get out of bed at all, and it wouldn't affect your life that big of a deal. But there are days where, you know,
and you don't always know
if you don't make a certain phone call, or you don't show up somewhere a certain time. You know, you're never going to talk to your best friend again or something. Or you're never going to or something.
Or you're not going
to
get the deal.
Right.
That's the scary part, yeah. What did you think about the whole heart thing and the whole him doing it anyway? And, like, I mean, think he was going to die?
I think
he was, like, about to die at the end?
I think so, yeah. That's what I got from
it. But it kind of made it more powerful, like he was just... He wanted that crowd adulation just one last time.
Not only that,
time.
But he pretty clearly knew he was going to die.
But you had what's her name? Marissa Tomei showed up.
That part was a little unrealistic to me. No, I don't know.
I mean, because it was like, you know, it was like she's an old stripper that's kind of like doesn't have much patronage anymore, and he's kind of the only one, and that's kind of their connection.
Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. I think that, and I liked what he said to her. I mean, this is just that's who he is. I mean, what. His options at that point were, I can go out here and do this, which is the coolest thing I'm going to do, probably, for the rest of my life. Or I can not do this, and then I can go live another 15 years in my trailer, not be able to pay my rent, and not have any friends.
Getting
and,
shit from Todd Berry at the grocery store?
Right.
Which is like that scene
that was
with
his options.
Deli.
That was his options that he was weighing. And,
yeah.
And I think he understood those options pretty well, and just decided, you know. Now, is that rational? I mean, could he have, you know, gone and said, oh, I'm going to go, you know, actually be more positive and try to do something else with my...
Or, like, get a job as a manager for a younger guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that could have been a different angle.
But he wasn't, again, he wasn't... If he was that smart, he wouldn't have been in that position in the first place, so it was kind of honest.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, did you...
Yeah, I did like... What I really liked about the thing about how he worked at that place was that, like, he brought such a positive attitude to everything he did in life, really. Like when he was working there, like, he was just, like, he'd be in a bad mood, and he'd go to work there, like, when he was in the deli, and he'd be, like, you know, there'd be, like, you know, everybody was depressed. If people were working with depressed, the customers were kind of just, like, either depressed or just down or bitchy or whatever.
But he still kind of turned to use
it
to entertain.
He'd be making jokes, and he'd be flipping around and throwing things and entertaining and saying stuff and, you know, having a good time with it.
Up to the customer service level? quality,
big time, and he was just doing, he did an excellent job with that, and made it fun.
He worked the crowd again.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was probably the best part of the movie, actually.
Because it made you more sympathetic for the character to see that, like, he was doing the best he could with what he had, kind of.
Yeah, most people would be like, oh, now I'm doing this, and I'm this old,
and they'd be bitter and really pissed.
They'd be bitter, and they'd do a shit job, and they'd fucking, you know, bitch about it and stuff, and he just went in there and was the best goddamn deli service guy he could be, you know?
Yeah.
And it was really kind of cool.
Cool. So you like The Wrestler? What kind of face would you give The Wrestler?
Oh. You know, that one probably would get a winky face, actually.
A winky face.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Probably right eye winky face.
Right-eyed winky face.
Did you finish the season finale of Louie yet?
No, I'm way behind on that show. I need to catch up on that. I will catch up on it now that I've finished a lot of other Sunday shows, and so...
Speaking of just honest, like, real characters, like...
Yeah, that show's good. I'm really looking forward to... I caught a glimpse of Tom Noonan in one, I guess the God one, and Tom Noonan is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Noonan. I stayed on it for a second because I'm like, I don't think this is Louie, but if I get just a little more clue that this is, then I'm going to think this is really awesome, and I'm like... I think this is Louie. Holy shit. I changed
it. He was in that episode for like a couple seconds.
That's cool. Yeah.
I mean, him as a child was in it. It was him as a child.
Oh, interesting. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up on it because it's it's such a like unique show. It's both funny and kind of like...
He really did effective. A good job in the finale of bringing everything that he did in all the other episodes together.
Interesting.
And sort of... It really, I doubt it's going to have another season.
It's supposed to have. It got picked up for another season.
So did that one show where MTV told them if they got a certain amount of...
Human Giant?
Yeah.
It did, though. Remember? And then they marathoned it one Friday, like, as a cop-out. Remember? It was like, we were trying to stay up late enough to watch all of them. They ended up doing it, but then they did a lot of it on the web and everything else. But no. But FX won't do that. FX doesn't have other product to push, necessarily.
It did come full circle as like a show though.
Cool.
Like it's a piece.
Well, the thing is, you if you get a show and you get like a 13, you don't always know you're going to get a second. So a good writers will make it so that like their season finale could be a series finale. And a lot of the best shows like Mad Men and stuff.
Yeah, it's not the kind of show that you'd have a cliffhanger in anyway.
Well, no, exactly. And a lot of shows don't, especially these days. It's rare to have shows that are that guaranteed to keep getting seasons. What are you doing?
But there's a balance that he walks between being just like ridiculously depressive,
mm-hmm.
and being just kind of like practical. That he really hits. So where most people would be like, if they did that, it would either be like just stupidly like, oh, this guy's an idiot, you know. But he kind of makes the point, and then he tries, and he's like, man.
No, I mean, I think with me, it's like, the show has had, in the episodes I've seen, and I've seen like the first five or something, like the first half, it's got unique enough characters he's interacting with and circumstances he's in, that like, he can still sort of do his thing in those different environments, and it works. It's not like he's just, so it's not quite like it's the same note.
Not
enough
of,
and it's the same note of humor. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, over and over again, so that's why I appreciate it. I mean, that was my problem with some of the stuff in some of the seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm, is that it started getting to the point where it was like Larry David was just being so ridiculously...
It was very absurd, yeah.
Absurd. Well, I mean, you only saw part of season 7, which I consider to be pretty solid all the way through.
Funny, but very absurd. Very unrealistic. Oh,
well, yeah, but that's fine, too.
I mean, that stuff could happen in reality.
Well, the thing is that it's realistic to a degree, and the sort of Hollywood bullshit factor, where all these people have so much money that they worry about that stuff.
But even in that, it's still unrealistic. It's still like, seriously.
No, but it is a lot.
Swan thing, like, really?
He killed that swan, dude.
Yeah, but really? Like it would go down like that?
That was pretty crazy, dude. How about you stop talking about killing the fucking swan?
As far as... Hey, asshole.
Yeah, hey, asshole.
Hey, asshole. How about you stop talking about the swan killing? It wasn't about the killing. It was the swan killing.
The swan killing, yeah.
And they tipped that guy $500.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he even knew about the swan killing.
Do you think he knew?
Like, wanted his tip back or something? No.
Mother of asshole and swan killer.
Yes. Because of, like, an argument over, like, the Red Sox and the Yankees or something.
It didn't need to happen at all.
Exactly. He was just trying to make, like, friendly... That's always when you get the most trouble, is when you just make that extra friendly comment that somebody takes wrong or something, and you're like, I should have just been completely blasé or whatever.
Oh, it's not friendly. You gotta do some fantasy drafts.
Mm-hmm.
People have their teams. You make jokes, but you gotta be careful.
Oh, really? Have you gotten in trouble with Beer League?
No.
Because you were just quiet? Your mum's the word?
Well, I wasn't quiet. I'm just saying, like...
Did Zach protect you?
No. I can just tell, though. Like, it's like, hey, quit talking shit about the Seahawks. It's like, dude, they're the Seahawks.
Oh, wow, that's hard. That would be difficult for me. Because it's the Seahawks and all.
Seahawks. Except, you know what? The Seahawks are actually awesome this season. This chair makes too much noise.
Yeah, it does make a lot of noise.
How do you do it?
I just sit quietly and talk about the movie. I talk about the themes and the ideas that it deals with. Like, I mean,